Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 953. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Destiny is calling you. You probably need a new website because we rely too heavily on social media these days. So make it with Squarespace, all right? Whatever idea you have, you can turn it into a website. You can showcase your work. You can blog your content, publish it to people on your terms, sell products and services of all kinds, or announce an upcoming event or a special project. Squarespace does this all by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers, very powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything, and then the ability to customize the look and feel, the settings of the products with just a few clicks. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. It's a new way to buy domains. You can choose from over 200 extensions, and analytics are going to help you grow in real time. Plus, nothing to patch or upgrade ever, and 24/7 award-winning customer support. So make it stand out. Stand out with a beautiful website. Check out squarespace.com for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code ID10T to save 10%, just like the 10 in ID10T, 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Let's take a journey to the corkboard. Jose Marrero writes, I've been working to help manufacture statues, collectibles from video games and comic books as a production director, and finally launched my own independently funded toy. The toy is called Wepa, inspired by the single-serve treat found at your local bodega. It reinforces positivity with its powerful expression. You cannot help but smile when you look at it. Wepa Flan toys and stickers sold at wepaflan.com, or you can follow Instagram, Wepa, W-E-P-A underscore Flan, F-L-A-N. And Dave Hollinger writes, my wife wrote a book called Ava Rose Greenwood, Junior Novelist. The book is funny, positive, appropriate for all ages, primarily targeted for tween girls, but my guess is that there are a lot of listeners like me with preteen kids. He has a 10-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old son, and they really enjoyed the book. He made a secret page on the website just for me and ID10T listeners that's worth checking out. Even if you have zero interest in the book, it's Ava, A-V-A, Rose, Greenwood.com /ID10T. Well done, Dave, and congratulations to your wife for writing a really cool book. This episode is my dear friends Natasha Leggero and Moshe Kasher. They are both brilliantly funny comedians, and they are married, and they have a new baby, and they also have The Honeymoon Special, which is their stand-up special, The Honeymoon Stand-Up Special, streaming now on Netflix. It's really great. They each do sets, and then they come out together and kind of like riff with the audience, so you should watch it. It is fantastic, and they are fantastic. And also, maybe you should also watch Another Period that Natasha co-created and co-writes and co-produces with Ricky Lindholm. So that's this episode, which is also brought to you by Mattress Firm. Are you struggling to get to sleep? It's likely that you are, because your head spins a million miles an hour and you can't get comfortable. But the fine people at Mattress Firm want to help you. They are America's neighborhood mattress store. They're going to help you stretch your budget a little bit further when you're looking for ways to improve your sleep. These are mattress experts. They're even more than mattress experts, actually, because they're going to help you build your bed from headboard to adjustable bases to sheets. They even have decor. They will have you covered literally and figuratively. Go to mattressfirm.com/ID10T and save 10% with the code ID10T through May 8th. Mattress Firm offers you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. Again, mattressfirm.com/ID10T to learn how your sleeping could be tremendously improved. Also, stamps.com. These days, you get practically everything on demand, like this podcast, like all of your content. Listen whenever you want, which is very convenient for you. So why are you still going to the post office to mail letters and packages when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? You can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk 24/7 when it's convenient for you. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package using your own computer and printer. The mail carrier just picks it up, click print mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. Right now, you can use the offer code ID10T for up to $55 of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. So please don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in ID10T. That's Stamps.com under the promo code ID10T. And I thank them for continuing to sponsor this podcast, even though we changed the name. And now here's the ID10T podcast number 953 with Natasha Leggero and Moshe Kasher. Katie, roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Today.
Oh my God!
It's today. Yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Are we starting? Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. We'll start.
Oh, we've started.
This is starting.
Oh wow!
This is happening.
Have you ever heard about Alan Funt?
Candid Camera.
Yeah, he originally was a radio, and for those of you listening, a radio host. For those of you listening, radio was like podcasting.
Wait, what?
It was the original podcasting, but it
Wait,
was.
So where would
what?
I download it?
Yeah, you could. Well, you didn't download. This is pre-download.
I don't understand.
Okay, the rate. Okay, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
What's the URL?
Okay, so
what's the URL?
So he would before he did Candid Camera, he did some version of a comedy radio show where he would like interview military people and he would have them in. And he would be interviewing them, and they'd be so interesting and talking about all their interesting military stories. And they'd be like, okay, great, now we're going to start. And he would press record, and the light would come on. And then the guys or girls would invariably be like, So he invented this idea of, somebody would come in, and he would do like an hour conversation with them. And then they'd be like, okay, when do we start? And he'd be like, oh, we already did it.
Yeah, I think someone had turned into a drinking game after a couple of years, the point, like how far into the podcast it would get before someone would go, oh, when do we start? And it was for that exact same reason, is because you don't, especially for people who are accustomed to doing, when they think of this as like, oh, this is like doing a radio show or whatever, then they immediately get defensive and their posture's up and their armor's up. But if you can kind of just, you know, show them that you're just talking to them, then they're totally... I thought you were going to say he was like the Ali G of his day, Alan Funt. And he would fuck with these people and they had no idea.
No, Alan Funt was a predator. For those of you that don't know, he was a monster of a man.
And that was before when there... that was in the time where you could say whatever you wanted and people wouldn't like... There was no backlash.
You could say whatever you wanted,
like,
except...
Now I feel like when I'm off the mic with my friends, usually I don't want that recorded.
Sure. That's back when you could say whatever you wanted, except I'm dating that person of color and dad. And then your dad would be like, no!
Yeah, right. That's the only thing you couldn't say.
Wait a minute. What did you say? It was a screen cap. It was a screen cap from your special where you had two people on stage, and it was something about, did they share a unicycle or they each have their own?
Oh, it was like two hipsters, and I was like, oh, do you guys share a unicycle or do you each have your own? And I think they were like, well, we only have one. Like they actually. Or no, that was the people who I asked, what vegan cafe did you meet at? And they were like, actually, we did meet at a vegan cafe, but it was in Peru.
No, truly, it was a riff that became reality. So the structure.
It's so easy to like read people.
The structure of our podcast, but we did a podcast, but with cameras, and it's for Netflix. It's called a comedy
and
special.
It was just a one-off.
Yeah, it's like radio, but there's visuals.
Wait a
and
minute,
it's,
what was Alan it's, Funt there?
Yeah, Alan
what's
Funt,
happening?
Alan Funt produced it. You produced it.
I did. It was great.
It's very complicated, but the structure is that it's like a three-part special. So Natasha does a set. I do a set, and then we do a set together where we come up and roast couples from the audience, kind of impromptu roast. And one of the couples came up, and they looked all funky, and Natasha riffed, what vegan cafe did you guys meet at? And they were like, actually, it was a vegan hostel, and it was in Peru.
Oh, yeah, vegan hostel.
It was like, we were like, no, this can't be real.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like there is like a –
like a sarcastic psychic gene, where you say something and then, because obviously it registered somewhere deep in your subconscious, and you quickly did the math and you say something and it turns out to be true. You're like, oh my God, I was just fucking around, but you obviously noticed something.
No, my theory on crowd work has always been that there's like true magic in every crowd, and if I can't, if I never find it, I do a lot of crowd work in my set.
Me
and
too.
If I didn't, if you don't find it, don't you feel that way? Like if I didn't find it, it's not because it wasn't there, it's because I fucked up somehow tonight. Like, there is always a story where invariably somebody will come up to you after the show and go like, those – Chris, you hired people to come with you to Denver, right? It's like, no, that's how magical people are.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's like a synchronicity. Remember there was a girl I was talking about, freegans, who are like vegans who like wait by dumpsters and eat things if it's for free.
Oh, okay.
Do you know about this? They're vegan –
But wait, so the food has to be vegan and disposed of?
No, they eat chicken.
Oh, freegans. Oh,
it has to be free.
Okay.
No, they're vegan. You never could quite stick this. They're vegans. This is her joke. They're vegans. I just remember it.
It's just always
confusing. 4 years of marriage, everyone. 4 years.
She wrote this.
Of marriage.
They're vegans unless it's free, in which case they'll
eat a sausage. Yeah. Right. But I mean, they also are kind of vegans. That's why it's confusing.
Well, yes, they're kind of vegans in that they're vegans unless it's free.
They don't all eat sausage. I think some of them
they'll
are.
They'll just eat anything
vegans.
That's free.
Yes.
No, a freegan is defined. Alan Funt first said a freegan is.
The first freegan was Alan Funt.
First there was freegans, then came radio.
In the 80s, there was freegonomics.
Trickle down freegonomics. That's where you put a sausage above your head and you wring it out like a towel.
Well, I just riffed that that is the definition of a freegan.
No, you didn't. It is a real thing.
You think that the actual definition is that they will eat a sausage if it's free?
Can we get a Google? Can we get a Google on this?
Katie is Googling now.
Katie,
I just thought it was funny to say if they eat a sausage.
No, it's what they are. It's your. This is your joke.
Moshe, I know.
Yeah. I'm just, as a man, I feel like it's my job to maybe explain to you.
Moshe
your
always
joke.
Wanted me to say it a certain way, and I like to just riff it a different way all the time.
Freeganism is a practice and ideology of limited participation in the conventional economy and minimal consumption of resources, particularly through recovering wasted goods like food.
No, they just wait outside of dumpsters.
The word freegan is a portmanteau of free and vegan. While vegans avoid buying animal products as an act of protest against animal exploitation, freegans, at least in theory, avoid buying anything as a... Maybe I'm wrong. Could that be?
As an act of protest against the food system in general.
So they just don't want to pay for stuff.
Exactly.
Because that contributes to the...
Thank you.
Wait a minute. This is maybe the first time in our marriage that I've been wrong?
Well, that feels inaccurate.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to let them think they're right most of the time, but then you're doing what you want to do.
Listen,
What do you mean them? What do you mean them?
We're very binary. We're either on or we're off. It's very easy to control. It's because we have very simple needs.
It's true.
All I need is a warm dumpster to cozy up next to.
Hey, baby, you're my warm dumpster. Am I right over here? Oh, we sat next to a group of those over here guys the other night, and we were fascinated. It was like three kind of like muscle dude bros and like three trophy ladies sitting across from them. And
was this at a restaurant?
It was at a restaurant, and all they could talk – it was like a fucking sketch. Everything they talked about referred to the square footage of things. Like that was the
hilarious.
That was the economy of their and also
that's
they
funny.
Were wildly incorrect about how square
Wait,
feet
but
were.
What's an example?
Oh, so yeah, you remember at that hotel in Vegas? That room was like 10,000 square feet.
Wait,
I'm like,
what?
No hotel room is 10,000 square feet. That is a massive multi-story house.
You remember Cindy from college? She's so hot, but she had square feet.
Very
though.
Square. That, very like 10,000 of them. She had like 10,000 of those. Wait, I don't get numbers.
Why are they so intrigued by square footage?
Because as much as I could glean in the short period of time that we had to tolerate them, is that was sort of their chest beating. Was that the more square footage something had, the more luxurious and therefore expensive and the more like, hey, we're significant this is. They would not stop talking about the square footage of things. But in that accent, it was like if you saw it on SNL, you'd be like, "This is the hackiest sketch I've ever seen," and it was totally related.
You know what I call that? I call that life hack.
That was life hack.
Not a life hack. This precedes life hacks.
Yes,
but life hack is where life gets so cliche. You're like, "Oh my god, I'm in a hacky bit."
Yeah,
I'm in a bit.
I'm in a sketch.
Yeah.
So I died, and this is my purgatory is having to be in this sketch. Next to these gentlemen.
There was a episode of the new Twilight Zone, where a stand-up comedian dies and goes to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, hell was that if he tried to do his material, he would bomb. But if he told true and horrifying details about his actual life, the audience would laugh. And that was the only way he could get laughs.
You know, and that's interesting because that sounds like there was a somewhat common sitcom convention in the 80s where a person on the show or a friend of someone on a cast member would try stand-up and bomb and then start telling real stories about, like, their mom or their friends, and then everyone would laugh. And those people were like, "Hey, that's not funny," you know? That was a very common thing, and I think it happened on, like, Happy Days. It happened on a few sitcoms.
There's also I'm Dying Up Here.
Oh, yeah. Is it good? I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it also.
Okay.
But I saw the first episode, and I felt like there was a moment of tell your truth and you'll get laughs, which I think is a more contemporary convention about stand-up.
And
right,
also,
that's not from the 70s.
Right, this is more...
Which is when that show takes place.
But also, well, Richard Pryor definitely led the charge
right.
in that. However, I think that there's a little more to when people go, "Oh, just tell the truth." Like, well, you also need to understand nuance, read audiences, know how to write jokes. Because if you just go up on stage and – I mean, I've seen people just go up and tell true stories. And
yeah.
It's,
oh, hey, how about in your first 6 months of stand-up, don't tell the bit you're working on about your deepest childhood trauma. Get some chops maybe a little bit. You know, work out some of your hackier joke form things and then go to the
– How about the guy we saw last night? Can we repeat that?
What was it? No. I mean, you can.
I won't.
No, do it.
you saw someone on stage last night somewhere?
Well, he...
You're gonna regret this.
I won't say it. I'm sorry.
No, just say it.
Well, because if he listens, it'll be devastating to him, right?
No.
No. He was...
He was very into it.
Me?
You want me to say it?
Well...
There was a guy that was doing bits about his...
He basically... What was the thing he opened with?
You're not going to want this on your podcast.
Okay, I'm sorry.
When an adult, I mean, you can edit it out.
Just,
you edit
he,
things?
He basically got on stage, but you can cut this out.
You can talk around it.
Okay.
No, you can't.
You know, you know the thighs and the stomach of a 5-year-old boy?
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
He basically got up there and said, "Hey, it's easy to...
It's easy to get laughs when you were 5 years old."
And that was his opener. And it was real. And it was, you know, very, very dark.
And did anyone laugh? Or was everyone like, was it just like a screeching?
The room laughed. But here's the only way I think this will be fun for us to talk about. The room laughed, but Natasha got extremely upset. And it was the show Kill Tony. Do you know that show?
No.
Tony Hinchcliffe does a podcast at the Comedy Store where they pick comedians out of a hat.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They come
yeah,
up
yeah.
and do a minute.
Yeah.
And then you kind of roast them afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he did it. And he got a good laugh, this guy, because he was sort of embracing his trauma in a way that was.
As an opener.
To him, empowering. And to the audience, they saw it as empowering as well. But Natasha, I thought what was interesting about last night, Natasha got really affected by it because.
Because I have a baby now.
the darkness was too dark.
Yeah.
You leave your kid alone with someone and they're going to like do that?
Yeah.
I
well, I mean, I've talked to many comedians who've had kids and then said, "Oh, yeah, you can't help it. It just things change when you have your own kid because you can't understand it until you have a kid that is part of you and some shit's not fun anymore." And I have friends who can never watch horror movies again because they just imprint it onto their own kids.
You don't know how many dying baby jokes I pitched on Another Period. And they were always like, "Nobody thinks dying babies are funny." And I was like, "But it's so funny."
And it's not funny anymore.
No, now it's not funny.
It's still funny to me. It's not. Is something wrong with me, or does this take men longer? I don't know, but I don't want that to be true.
Maybe you haven't hooked into the full force of being a father.
I want to hook into the full force of being a father, but I don't want things to stop being funny. I don't want to stop watching horror movies. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Well, I'm hoping I break through to something new.
Because we also saw that Joaquin Phoenix movie. Have you seen that yet? You Were Never Really Here?
Oh, no. How was that?
It was
intense. It arty?
It was very arty.
It was like an art film with violence.
Yeah,
that's
an art film with extreme violence. Yeah.
Got it.
And there's a lot of child sex things happening in it.
Jesus.
And it's very dark. Oh, it's unbelievably dark. And Natasha also had a real hard time with that because of that content.
Well, it's the darkest thing because it's like all you have to do is molest a child and then their life gets fucked up.
Yeah.
And they're so little and helpless.
And you're seeing this tiny little creature that came out of your body, and you, I would imagine, your prime directive is like, I must protect this at all costs.
Well, my prime directive is to not contaminate cultures with Federation ethics. You know what I mean?
Sure. Okay.
That's
good.
Sort of my
prime directive.
Right. Right. That's your prime.
But secondarily.
But also, even like old men, and you know, some of those comics we saw last night who were like bombing and just like saying like things that weren't funny. Like, I just kept thinking, like, they used to be a little baby.
Yep.
And I don't want to say anything bad about
it. There's a very similar... Someone called me... I was talking to a friend of mine the other day when Robert Kirkman was over. And he was... It was so funny that he picked up on this. He was fascinated, because he has a couple kids, that Lydia walked by during the podcast. And she was like, oh, what do you want to do for dinner tonight? You want to go out somewhere? Do you want to stay in? And I go, I don't know. We'll figure it out. And he was like, what is happening? He goes, you childless fuck. Like, so as a childless fuck, I will say that...
childless fuck.
I see, you know...
So you'll have round-the-clock help anyway when you have your child, so you'll still be able to do that.
Okay, good. But when you when you have your own pets and you go out into the world and you're at a zoo and you see, like, a lion or something, you're like, it looks just like a noob! Like, you see your own pets in other animals in the world. That's a very bad comparison to your children.
No, it's not. No.
But whatever you're connected to is how you see the world.
No, Chris, we think of her as a pet. 100%. We put, what's the front line on her back of her neck?
Yeah. Just between the shoulder blades. Yeah, you just do it right between the
advantage.
Shoulder blades once a month.
She was just scratching a little bit, and we're just like, I know what to do here. Yeah, advantage.
Controls fleas and ticks.
That's right.
The collars weren't working. She was pulling them off, chewing on them. That's not healthy.
Isn't that the comedian, though? The comedian has got to be the guy or the girl who is able to go into the dark place for comedy, even after the childbearing
but
years.
But if your psyche can't find the nuanced way into that to present it in a way that is ridiculous and fantastical and clearly exaggerated for comedic effect, then I would imagine like that's just not possible anymore. Then it's just telling sad stories on stage.
Yeah, you heard it here first, folks. Natasha Leggero is now a stand-up dramatist.
No, come on.
Well, I found that, like, it was very important for me to talk about my dad dying on stage. And it was the process of finding where the jokes were. Mm-hmm. And, it's like, oh, some people were okay with this. But they were like, I tried so many times to write something about having an open casket,
uh-huh.
Like how weird it is. Like I had a nephew that was poking him in the face and how you're just basically, it's just like a weird party. It's a weird family reunion that's even weirder because your dead father is in the corner. And I could never, no matter how many angles I hit it from, I guess I didn't have the skill set to that one concept people they were never comfortable with.
Because they're picturing it.
They're picturing it, yeah.
They're like seeing you, trauma, dad in the I mean, it's, yeah. that's a tough sell.
So it was that.
And you might be reminding them of their dead parent.
Of course.
On top of that.
Yeah, so I was never able to make that one fly. So it's not always.
It'd be nice if you looked out, the whole audience is quiet, but there's one guy like, yes, Chris, yes.
Your dad's dead.
When my dad died, I got an email from, because people, as you know, are so ill-equipped to deal with death. And it happens to everyone, invariably, always it will happen to everyone, but people just don't know how to deal with it. And my dad died when I was 20, so my friendship circle was even less equipped. And I got an email from a person that was like, sorry to hear about yo papa. Yo, papa.
I mean,
I'm just gonna talk
trying.
To him. I'm just gonna be real with him. I'm just gonna be real with him.
Did you write him back?
I mean, I was beyond. This just happened to me today. I like when things like this happen. I posted about our special today, and somebody wrote in the comments, "SJW cuck." And it was such a
SJW
Social Justice Warrior cuck.
Oh.
And it was such a hacky insult that it burst immediately through offended, through angry through amused all the way back into I like this guy. I think this is so cliche. So that's how I felt about
that's
sorry
what's
to
so
hear
funny
about
is that when people troll you with stuff like that and you get mad and they think like aha I got them, it's like that's not the reason. Like it's a fucking hacky fuck you. Write a better fucking troll joke.
So with sorry to hear about Yo Papa, I actually just sort of immediately was like this is kind of awesome. I must admire how bad you just whiffed it.
I just realized something.
What?
Things really started to go downhill once troll became a verb.
I guess that's true.
You know,
once we
like
labeled it.
As soon as that happened with the internet, it's like that's really what is bad about the internet.
Well, yeah, maybe so.
Again, you know.
That didn't used to have a name.
No, but if.
Because it wasn't a thing.
But if you know, sort of what we were talking about a little bit before the podcast, if part of our biological narrative is significant, like we must feel significant in some way, we have to feel significant in some way, and then you have a bunch of people who don't understand, or maybe they were hurt, or they don't understand how to get good attention through a positive support structures, then they're just going to break shit because then they'll get attention that way,
but
and it empowers them.
But they want attention more now than they used to. I think the internet is making everyone want attention where other people...
I compare it to this. Like when my ex-ex-ex-girlfriend was on the fourth season of The Real World.
Whoa, that was a lot of math I just had.
It was XXXX.
XXX, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
So she was on the fourth season of Real World, and most of them were all Europeans.
And that was kind of like the first reality. That wasn't that the first big reality show?
It was
show?
The first kind of big regular reality show besides, like, Cops.
Can we guess? Was it Puck?
It was Puck.
Okay, great.
No, Puck was San Francisco. This was London. Nice try. That was season 3. And so none of them were really familiar with The Real World, and so everyone... Like at the time, it was considered a boring cast because they didn't fight, they didn't do anything. So what a lot of people who were watching The Real World didn't understand is that the producers would basically shoot all this footage of these kids and then construct stories in the edit.
Oh, wow.
They would create
fake stories.
Kind of fake stories. Like things that they were based on things that happened, but they would take like the beginning of one sentence and the end of another sentence and make it one sentence and apply it to something that it was never. And
that's so, like called something in reality TV, like some kind of Frankenstein thing.
Now it's called Truth.
did you see the video just today of the Obama video? Did you see that?
No.
It's basically a video, like it's gone to its furthest iteration because it's a video of Obama who, I don't know if you guys know, he's our last president.
What?
Who's on the last season of The Real World.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, he's on the last season, yeah.
By the way, The Real World DC. For me, I always used to say about The Real World, they call it The Real World, but it's anything but.
No, that's where people stop pretending and they get real.
Right,
whatever
start
that's
being
it.
Polite.
And start getting real.
But no, this video is making the rounds on the internet. You'll see it tonight, I'm sure. You're probably it was today that it came out. It's Obama talking and his mouth is moving with the words that he's saying, but it's Jordan Peele. His voice impersonating Obama saying, you know, I think Key and Peele is the greatest comedy troupe of all time. And Donald Trump, it's basically the furthest iteration, and it's only the beginning of the technology, of like video manipulation.
Sure, sure, sure.
There is no more truth now.
No. And truth is very subjective because people can kind of build whatever truth they want. But
what was your point about The Real World?
What happened is... They would construct these inflated stories and create characters on the show based on, you know, whatever sort of footage they could cobble together to create very, you know, this is the obnoxious person, this is the sensitive person, this is the angry person. And I remember when they first saw their first episode, they said to the producers, like, none of this happened that way. And the producer was like, no. We never said it was a real life. We said it was a reality-based soap opera when they would talk to the kids.
Wow.
So in the beginning, the producers were creating these kind of inflated, exaggerated personalities. And so a generation of kids watched that and thought, oh, that's what you have to do. So then the next wave of kids came in batshit.
They're mimicking it.
So they were mimicking a manipulated version of reality. And so when you start getting... You know, with each generation, they have
then you
to
got
up
New
the
York,
stakes.
Or like, who are those people from
so
Flavor of Love?
So people are watching like an up. The stakes are upped, and then the next generation is watching up.
Wow!
So by the time you know you're 20 some seasons in, it is you're seeing such a crazy iteration of where it initially started, which is just like, oh, they were just normal and sort of manipulated to look all psychotic, and so that's sort of the same thing where. People are – it's raising the bar every time on what extreme behavior is, And there's a new kind of bench. There's a new baseline with each generation. It just gets crazier and crazier and crazier.
With that thought, apparently I heard recently that sex sometimes back in the day used to not end with bukkake.
What?
Yeah, there was a time when sex would end with just a gentle eye contact.
Well, that is actually a weirdly related point, which is that a generation of
porn.
Kids are growing up with easy access to porn.
I'm doing a bit about that right now.
And becoming desensitized.
And educated from porn. They think that's what sex is. That's
right.
What normative sexuality is. It reminds me of memory. Do you know about how it's exactly analogous to the way that we remember things? You know about this? Apparently, memory isn't – when you remember something, you don't remember the incident. You remember the previous time that you recalled the incident. So you're remembering the memory.
Oh, my God.
Right? So so over time, your actual memory starts to skew.
Right.
Because you're not remembering the incident. You're not remembering where we first met.
There's a degradation. It's like a cassette tape of a cassette tape of a cassette tape of a cassette tape.
And so that's interesting that's happening in reality TV. Like in reality – and then in quotation marks, reality TV. That's so fascinating.
Well, that's why if we go all Black Mirror and we basically can actually capture things as they happen from our own point of view to recall at any second, you know, I don't know if that's going to be helpful or if it's going to make everything a million times worse.
It seems like your nightmare, Natasha.
I'm definitely anti-technology.
So is Lydia.
Really?
Yep. Drives her nuts.
I'm just like, you know, sometimes I'll talk to Moshe and I'll just be talking and I'm like... Hello? Hello? Did you hear that? Hello?
She does it in that 1930s voice, too. Hello?
It's one of my favorites. I love the Natasha 1930s voice.
Yeah, you're lucky, Mosh.
I am lucky.
You get to hear it all the time. Yeah. Hello? Hello?
Hello? I love you.
But yeah, it's...
Klondike 432?
I find it very depressing. I don't know. I just feel like... Also, I think like the world is changing and I just have very little... I have very little faith in it because everyone's just now like completely distracted.
And what a perfect time to bring a child into the world.
Well, I'm only having one.
Just one.
And I just wanted to make sure I got all the experiences of life.
Fantastic.
I can't tell you how often, I would say quarterly, Natasha just stops in the middle of a conversation and just goes, why wasn't I born in the 1940s? It happens all the time.
You would have hated it.
30s, 20s.
I think you would have hated it.
Really?
Yes.
You know what I like? I like what technology... has done for music. I like that I can have speakers throughout my house and just on my phone pick any song in the world. I think that's good. And I also like mobile massage. So for those two things, I'm into technology.
I'm no on email. I'm no on accessibility for the disabled. Wait. I'm no on the end of isolated communities being able to communicate with family members, but I am into soothe.com.
No, but the problem is, Mosh, is that... Oh, what was the first thing he said?
What?
It's not that I'm against email. It's just that the urgency has become like it's so persistent. Like on my way here, even when I was meeting you out front, I was like sitting there trying to like, because everyone's like, what's your answer? We need to answer by 4. And it's like, I just got the email. Like, why is that the precedent that's being set? And so if that is what's happening all the time, and it's not even for important stuff, you know, but it's like everything is just kind of like... It's just, I feel so inundated and I want there to be a time where I'm just like, it's like how I feel when I smoke pot. That's why I like to smoke pot sometimes because it's like,
Natasha.
When I smoke pot, it's just like, oh, I'm just going to like walk to the cafe and maybe I'll run into a friend. And it just feels like life is like moving at the right pace.
Well, yeah. I mean, I am of the firm belief.
Sorry, I know you're both sober.
No, it's fine. I am of the firm belief that our brains, that technology exceeded what our brains can process.
Uh-huh.
That the amount of information that we are asking our brains to process every day at all times, number one, makes us feel like time is blowing by at a meteoric rate because we're not notice. We're so distracted all the time. And number two, that we just have so many open loops in our brains at all times of things that – because our brains don't always know the difference between what is an important task and what is a non-important task. It just knows
– I've got 16 emails.
That's right.
And then you just start returning them and it's like,
I got to do this.
What's the
Why?
Triage? What's the priority?
Does this really need to happen now? Yes, I got to do it now. Why? Because I don't have to think about it anymore. You know? I mean it's – it's mostly a complete illusion.
But you've been a pretty robust advocate for the advantages of technology.
Yes, I have.
And I'm not even –
No, you're absolutely
here,
right.
And here comes the roast.
No,
but so I think there is some balance between your position or maybe your position is evolving, and your position is – there is some like – I did an episode of my show on Comedy Central about this. I mean, we had this guy, Nicholas Carr, on who wrote a book called How the Internet is Changing Our Brains, The Shallows. It's called, right. How the Internet is Changing Our Brain. He basically argues that our brains have become less functional, that we have abused their elasticity with the gavaging of the foie gras ducking of information. Mm-hmm. And so he had really salient and terrifying points to make about the way our brains are just no longer processing things deeply, and that we're less contemplative.
Will it change, or like will we evolve to keep to catch up with it?
It depends on, I think, what happens.
I do think that people. I mean, I think that there is probably a natural selection element at play, that people will excel, mm-hmm. who know how to. Function in a shallow, like real quick moving world where information is that fast and you have to process it. And the people who can't, the more, they will just sort of fade back away. So yeah, I mean, it reminds me of how when right after I started doing at midnight, I had lunch with Conan and we were talking about doing a daily show, and he goes, yeah, you just live in your short-term memory. And he said, when Jerry Orbach died, I said to my staff, like, oh man, I wish, I'm so sorry I never really got to meet that guy. I wanted to have him do this one sketch on a show and on the show, and he described it, and they go, yeah, we did that. And he goes, no, we didn't do that. And they go, yeah, we did that. And he goes, I would fucking remember if I did that sketch with Jerry Orbach. So they sat him down and showed him a tape from the first season of his show where he had done the exact sketch that he had no memory of doing.
He just has memory loss.
Well, I would forget. I would run into people and go, you should do At Midnight. They were like, I was on last month.
That's
because
funny.
You, when you live so much in your short-term memory, which technology forces us to do, things are really not seeping past that upper layer of your brain.
And you need to seep past to like invent something or create something great. Like you can't be in that short-term area. And like we all know, we'll be like focused on something. Oh my God, I have to write that down. You grab your phone to write a note, and then all of a sudden you have an email.
Uh-huh.
And then this email is about, or a text, what kind of coffee do you want? Or it's just something stupid. And then all of a sudden your mind gets totally on that track. And then you forgot the thing that you came there to go, it's just, it's very,
right.
We all know what this is.
It's like Siddhartha sat and stared at a river for 40 years and then was like, aha. It's like, we don't have time for all that now.
I want to stare at a river.
Well, let's stare at one. I think that'll be the furthest iteration of technology, is that when VR becomes truly immersive, and then everybody's so tired of technology that they put on VR goggles and then just like go to a farm in Vermont.
No, they'll get onto VR and start playing video games in VR. Like, they'll be a creature playing a video game in VR. But I think you're right. There is a healthy meat. There is a balance somewhere. We're just not... I think as a species, we're not good at balance. We need things to be binary. We need extremes, because it's easier to subscribe. If you throw yourself into an extreme, that's a lot less work.
Right.
Because constructing a tailor-made ideology of balance is a lot of emotional energy, and most people just don't have it because, again, we're answering, 1,000 emails.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to say, is like, on the one hand, there's Nicholas Carr's idea that we're getting stupider. On the other hand, my personal experience with my mother growing up, who's a deaf woman, like, technology and the internet has been like the most liberating thing in the world for her. Like,
right.
Nothing has given her more access to the world.
But what percentage of the world is deaf?
99.
What?
Yeah, it just changed. You're out of business in this podcasting arena, bro.
I can't hear you. What?
See, it's spreading.
What? I would love to sort of shift gears a little bit to talk about the birth of your child, because I don't know why, but I just – and I never even really thought of it. I was like, I never pictured like, oh, you guys will have kids. Not because there's anything, but I just think like,
kid.
Sorry, several kids.
No, I couldn't imagine.
Did you ever want any children, or was this a last minute thing, or was it in, was it
well,
not
I must
planned?
Have subconsciously wanted one, because I did freeze my eggs.
That's just so interesting, is her act is always like, her famous joke is, I'll never be pregnant for long.
Right.
I mean, that's not my famous joke.
Oh, what is? Oh, actually, your famous joke is even more
having a child is like a DUI from the universe.
There's that, and then there's also toilet babies.
Oh, I have a whole thing on toilet babies.
Yeah, yep. So it's not exactly like,
oh, I didn't know I was pregnant. Is that the I was pregnant bit? Yeah,
where they're just like sitting at a Wendy's, and then a baby Arthur comes out.
Baby Arthur. It's a perfect name for a toilet baby.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah, so I froze my eggs, and then, you know, I met Moshe, and he's Jewish, so they like to have like a family. And
that is a hurtful stereotype about my people. We do not like to have a family.
Well, you know, it's like important, I think, to the you know, Jewish culture to like procreate. Isn't that like, well, I converted to Judaism, and the two major tenets were like keep Shabbat and procreate.
Don't pull out.
Yeah, don't pull out and keep Shabbat.
Yeah.
So
stay in.
Leave it in and don't and do
don't
this.
Take it out.
Don't take
yeah,
it out.
Yeah.
Leave it in. And don't
so I froze my eggs. Like a while ago. And
but that is pretty cool, right? That she froze her eggs even while she's telling these jokes about I'll never.
I didn't know Moshe. Well, I just was like, maybe I'll meet someone who would be like worthy of raising a child with.
Meanwhile, I'm in San Francisco cutting my teeth, you know? just obliterating crowds night after night.
I thought you were going to say
you're remembering the memory of a memory.
you cut to the real me and it's just like cricket, literal crickets. And
what am I doing?
Why am I a comedian?
So since you asked if you'd like to know my story.
I do.
I froze my eggs and I got like 10. And then I met Moshe, and then they keep them in a freezer, and then they have to turn them into embryos. So then Moshe.
We let's tell the full story too. We had a hard time.
Oh yeah, because I was trying to save those. And then
we started doing IV. Do you mind if we just truly?
I mean, I wasn't going to talk about that, but now that you said it,
well, is that what you?
Sure, if you're talking about, yeah.
Well, we went through like a few rounds of IVF because we weren't successful
because we were duped by the doctors and.
Well, we weren't successful the regular style or doggy style, and and so then we started like. And IVF is brutal to women. I don't know if you...
Well, I've been talking to Matt Myra because he and Dory have been going through it. And they've had a whole... They do a whole podcast. I say this because they do a whole podcast
about IVF?
Yes, it's called Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure. Because what they realized is that there was a lot of stuff that they didn't know or understand about IVF. And it was very hard for them emotionally. And so they started doing a podcast. And other people found it and said... This is life changing because this is shit that no one tells you.
They're like, now we're just going to travel. We're not going to have kids. Uh-huh.
But also, people that go through it are like embarrassed. There's something happens where the women feel like they've done something wrong if they can't get pregnant.
It's Matt's fault because his sperm count's almost zero. So yeah, so
yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say I was completely at fault.
No, I mean, no one was at fault. I don't think we ever figured out what if it was me or you.
But it wasn't working.
But it wasn't working.
And also, it's very confusing because it's like. You can only get pregnant one day a month.
Isn't it shocking?
I don't understand
this
how...
This thing that you live in fear of when you're a teenager and my parents were just like, don't fuck... And when you get old and you realize, like, it's actually... It's insane that anyone ever gets pregnant
right.
with the timing of it.
Except that it's not as insane when you're a teenager. I've learned this.
You have so many eggs that if you happen to have sex on that day or 3 days around that day, you're pregnant.
They told me, well, yes, because they told me when a woman is 38 or 40 or something, her egg count of fertile viable eggs is something like 80-20 or 90-10 bad.
Oh, wow.
When they are 18, the numbers are reversed.
Oh,
it's
shit.
90%. So 90%
another reason
chance.
For you guys out there to not have sex with 20-year-olds.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
As if you needed more reasons.
Yeah, it's awful. Having sex with 20-year-olds is one of the worst things. So we did IVF, which is hardcore. It's like you were shooting – I mean – it's like an injection.
Yeah, but I sold my eggs in college, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
I mean, I had like put... I mean, it never actually turned into a baby because there was issues with the other end. And I was like, okay, I don't want to do this. But I was used to like shooting up myself.
Shooting up.
With hormones. Yeah. You're flooding your body with hormones.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hardcore. It was hardcore. I thought you were so strong. I mean, I'm being sincere now. I thought you were... It was so incredible to watch because it was like... It's not cool what happens to women when they shoot themselves filled with hormones night after night. It's like really intense.
And it also feels like, you know, it also just feels so, at least from what I've heard from Matt, so businessy in the sense that like they're charging so much for stuff that's like, does this really need to cause that much? Or do you just know that people will pay it because they want to have children?
Right. Yeah. It's like every vial's $400. You know,
crazy.
It's just silly.
It's so expensive. IVF is very expensive. And we did two rounds of it and it wasn't working. And I started to freak out financially. And I remember the conversation the doctor had. It was so funny. He sits me down and he goes, look. I go, why don't we just use these eggs that she's got? these eggs are sitting right there. Let's just use these eggs that she's got. You know, because like as much as Jews like to have family, we like to not spend money even more. And he goes, listen, you got to think about those eggs like a savings account. Okay, you want to keep the savings account, and you got to think of the IVF more as like a checking account, and you spend that money. And I'm like, can we not use a bank and life savings based metaphor?
P.S. Sorry about your papa.
Wait, why are you talking to me like this?
We got a different doctor, and then they told us to use those eggs. So then we turned them into embryos.
We thought 10 out.
I thought when I froze my eggs. If anyone's listening out there. If you get 10 eggs, that doesn't mean you're going to have 10 kids. That's what I thought. But so they freeze them, and then when they make them embryos...
They thaw them out.
Only
and then
like,
you go, as the men, you go into the lab and you jerk off on top of it. Recently thawed.
Mm-hmm.
You just spray it down.
Just all the way across.
Yeah. One,
and wherever it lands.
Boop, boop, boop,
it's like a carnival game.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then I think 4 of them turned into embryos. The other ones kind of died.
And that doesn't ensure that it's...
No, and then they tested them. And then they grade them. So then they tested them, and then 2 survived.
We're down to 2 now.
And okay. So I put one up, and it died.
She did it herself. They put it on your finger,
oh,
and you
that's
just
so
pop
strange.
It up. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize.
Weird.
But that's a lot. That's really expensive to just, jam your finger in yourself.
That's what I thought. But no, actually, that was my idea. The doctor was like, usually the doctor is. I was like, no. I heard this metaphor
recently.
So he
was like, okay, so now there's one left. Yeah. Nice job, Moshe.
People are going to be so confused how this works. Okay, so they stuck one up, it died, and then they stuck the other one up, and it's at home with a nanny.
Well, that is true. We were down to, and that was a very nostalgic way of telling that tale, Natasha. But yeah, we thawed them out, again, went down to 2. We put one in, and it didn't take, and we were down to 1 egg. And we were thinking to ourselves, like, we really were going, like, okay, maybe it's not going to, for us. Maybe
so you wouldn't
have
gone through it again.
There was nothing to go through.
I would have just gotten a donor egg and mixed it with Moshe's sperm and told everyone it was my kid. But like, get someone, you know, find a girl that like looked like me, who was Italian, who had a dimple, who maybe went to Harvard. and then I would have carried it and, you know.
Or adopt a 17-year-old.
Right, that's true.
Isn't that your joke?
Well, yes. But then I was starting to think, like, because now you have a baby, you have got to, like, all the parenting books, so you have to constantly talk to it. But she can't focus. So then I'm, like, constantly talking to her, but I don't know what to talk to her about. And now I'm just like, when would I really like to hang out with her? And I think it's, like, when she's 30.
You know.
Podcasts aren't permanent, right? She'll never be able to hear this.
No, not by then.
Yeah, great.
I liked the idea of imagining us as like, you know, we could have a glass of wine and like talk.
I have to tell you, it makes me happy to hear you say that, because Lydia is a great talker, and I've tried to video this many times, and she'll always catch me and be like, turn that off. She talks to the cat nonstop, sings to the cat, runs her lines for auditions with the cat. I hear her sometimes just having full...
Is she an only child?
No. Just having full conversations. There's not even an excuse for it. Just having full-on conversations with the cat. And so I know...
Is it baby talk or just regular talk?
Regular talk.
That's
someday
cool.
You're going to come home and you're going to hear her talking, and then you're going to hear... Chris doesn't love you like I love you. Mr. Frisky.
Yeah, it's so I think we're very covered in that respect. Well, that's great. That is a very
I'm sure I'll enjoy other parts, but I do think that, you know, the newborn phase is a very particular phase, and everyone's like, then they start teething. Then they start being toddlers that you have to run around and catch. Then they start to hate you.
I've heard that a lot from parents, though, that by the time they'll say like they're four or five or six years old, they'll go, now it's fun. They go, for the long time, it was just about, you know, just being able to get this creature to stand up and understand the world. But now that they kind of have little personalities, now it's like we can hang out with them.
Well, Natasha's pretending to be kind of hardcore, but she's always going like, all I want to do is hang out with my baby. Tell the truth.
No, I do want to hang out with her, but she doesn't do that much.
That is very true.
She just started, like, looking at us in the eye.
Kind of.
Like, and kind of smiling, but not really. She's only 8 weeks old.
How did you change? Did you feel a switch flip?
Here's what happened. We got home from the hospital, and we thought our whole world was changed. And Moshe kept, like, singing to her every morning. And then after, like, 3 days, we're like, oh, she's just a blob. And, like, she's not going
to
give back. And then I think we got a little bored.
I would sing to her every morning. I would be like, wake up! You wanted to. With some chop suey by System of a Down every morning.
But now that she's like waking up, because she also, our baby, I don't, Moshe doesn't want to admit this, but she cries a lot. So basically, it's not just like, oh, it's boring. It's like, oh, she woke up, you fed her, and now she's going to cry for an hour and a half. And nothing kind of makes her stop crying. And then as soon as she stops crying, she just goes back to bed. So that was that got a little old, as you can imagine.
Do you get numb to that in terms of like hearing it? Did you ever think that if a baby cried for an hour and a half before you had kids, you'd be like, oh my God, what do people do? But now that you're in it, you're like, oh, it just
Well, now her
stops.
Personality's changing a little bit, so she's like awake and not crying.
Okay.
Which is like nice. Would you say that, Mosh?
Yeah. There's definitely a moment. There's about 2 months. There's a 2 month phase where you're like, oh, this baby doesn't do anything but like hope to death that it's cute enough to keep you sticking around.
I was actually reading about that part of them having chubby cheeks is so that you take care of them. So it's so cute.
You, the monkey, doesn't go, I can't deal with this. I'm out. I'm going to the next jungle.
This baby's too fit.
Yeah.
My baby got a six pack. He doesn't need me.
I mean, they're all cute.
There's another idea that babies come out looking a little bit more like the father than the mother, so that the father, and really we're talking about like the evolutionary father, doesn't take off and go like,
and then the looks change.
Yeah,
right. But human babies, I think, besides whales, are the only mammals born with blubber. Yes, I think that's true. That other mammal babies are just these skinny little, you know, barely like skeleton creatures. Like they're just very skinny, and human babies have like blub, like a little bit of blob to them.
Oh, I wish we had a skeleton creature.
I like our little blob.
Whales also do the grandparent thing. I just found out. Do you know that? Whales.
Well, you mean they're much cooler to the grandkids than they were to the parents?
That's right. They buy them toys.
Yeah, exactly. But it was never like this.
They have a grandparent system where the family unit is so cohesive that the grandparent helps raise the grandchild.
In my day, we didn't have krill all the time. you whale kids are spoiled. In my day,
the ocean was much more shallow back then before this global warming nonsense.
I like the idea of thinking of like what is the next generation of grandparents? What are millennial grandparents going to be like? It's going to be great.
Who can even predict what millennial kids will be like? And like, because I think we won't even really know for, you know, a good couple of decades what the fallout of all the technology and everything we were talking about before. We still don't really know how that's going to affect humanity.
Well, the generation under millennials, I believe, is called Generation Z. And then there's a generation that our kid is, people being born right now. And they're
called Final Generation.
No, well, they're the ones who are supposed to save us.
So they're the Messiah generation?
Save us from the robots, save us from the technology, save us from the pollution, hopefully.
This is such wishful thinking.
I'm just saying that's the generation. I mean, there's not going to be a generation after our kid.
Oh, my God.
Do you think
that's true?
I don't know.
What
maybe
do you
I'm
think, Chris?
Speechless.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there'll be a generation. I mean,
there'll be a human life, but if global warming doesn't...
Nuclear war.
Yeah, or global warming will be... I mean, I don't know what... Why did we have a kid?
Well, I mean, she was just sitting in a freezer.
Right.
You know,
might as well
let her live.
Yep.
I'm always... I definitely dated comedians before, and usually women who are much funnier than me too. And
oh, that's not true.
Totally true. Oh my God, are you kidding? Andrea Savage, Janet Varney, fucking funny as fuck.
They're very funny, but so are you.
Well, but I also wondered, I'm always fascinated by comedy couples because you do understand each other on a certain, you understand how your careers, you understand how your minds work, but I also always wonder, do the same things that are strengths also, you know, do your weaknesses rub up against each other too? Your insecurities, is it, you know how to take care of each other, but then sometimes when you're both not in a great place, you kind of have the same, you have the same kryptonite as well. Is that not true with you guys?
Well, there's that idea in, I think 12-step, actually, that it's like it's just a good thing that we're not all having a bad day at the same time.
Right.
So I almost think like just what you're talking about, the weaknesses, when Natasha's having a rough career day and vice versa, it's like there's this innate understanding of I've been there, I've done that. Not that other couples don't have that exact same thing, but there is a kind of shorthand for stuff that in comedy I do feel like it's almost all advantage for me. But I'm not a jealous person. Like I've heard about comedy couples where like one person is like upset at the success of the other, and that's just not...
Not that way either. I think everyone should succeed. I mean, like, I think there's room for everybody to succeed, because it's not like I'm not getting parts because someone I'm dating got a part. Like, there's no... Even if we were going up for the same thing, it's like, oh, I don't give a shit. You know, like, you're funnier here, so you should get this.
I once heard a casting announcement about a female wrestler in GLOW, and I was like, oh, man. And then I was like, oh, my God, what is wrong with me? Like, that was, to me, the biggest window into the ego.
That is the problem with Twitter and Instagram. I feel like Twitter stresses me out, and then Instagram, I'm like, why aren't I at that party? Why aren't I at that opening? What, you know, and it just...
FOMO.
Yeah.
And that's what babies are good for. You create your own party.
That's...
You really do.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that idea of it. And also, you know, when Lydia and I sort of talk about, you know, when I've said, like, oh my God, our lives are going to change. And she's like, we're in bed by like 8 o'clock. What are you? And I go, yeah, that's right. Actually, we don't go out very often. There's no crazy lifestyle that we lead. I feel like, you know, other than just getting up every hour, like that, like our lifestyle itself is not going to change a whole lot.
Also, you're smart and developed and you have perspective, and you'd be such a great... Like, I think we're the type of people who should be having at least one kid to make that generation that's going to save the world.
Are you thinking about having... Is that
yeah, for sure. Oh, no, I will. Cool. Yeah, for sure. But we're just not there yet. I also think that the other good thing about the two of you is that your comedy voices are so distinct and formed that I imagine it's... You guys aren't in a situation very often where it's like fighting over the scrap of a joke. Like, you gonna use that joke?
Yeah,
I use that joke because your voices are so they're so formed
and so different from one another.
Sometimes
too.
We both had a joke about jerking off to feet in our special.
That is
but,
true.
You know, they were very different perspectives. Like my perspective is that men are so horny because women have never jerked off to feet. Like that's not a thing that's ever happened once. Like, you know.
And mine was all about her Instagram comments about guys going like, because her Instagram comments are so funny to me. It's just like these dudes, and I just don't get the, it's like catcalling in that you're just like, what is the game here? Like,
right.
These dudes are just like, oh, those feet though, your feet, where the feet? I want the feet. Oh, honey. Oh, get the divorce. Let me smell your farts. It's just like, what's the possible working out of this thing? Like, she DMs him like, my farts, I just ate a burrito. Come on by. But. So that was my perspective. And then, but what was interesting is we had to wrestle over where it worked better. It's not a callback per se, but it's a kind of thematic callback for which would work better for her to do her foot stuff first. She did. It wasn't even a competition so much as where would it fit mathematically better.
Right.
What felt more like a callback? And in the end, it was like, yeah, she sets it up and then it becomes almost a callback, which I think is one of the unique things, the subtleties of our special is that there's almost callbacks, but it's a different comedian, which I think is kind of neat. Also, though, we did in the third act of this, the third part of the special, we tell a story together and we were trading punchlines. Like, I would tell it one night and it wouldn't work. And then so Natasha would try the
and
same.
And I'd show them how it's done.
Oh, shit.
Same joke and it would work for her. They're like, okay, you do that or vice versa.
That's so interesting. And also just the idea that, you know, doing comedy together is such a – that's a pretty magical thing to be able to do in a relationship, touring together. Not, you know, being with each other both in your leisure time and at work, essentially, where your stage show really does depend on you both being present and there for each other. That's a fucking amazing, almost couples therapy kind of an exercise.
I feel incredibly lucky.
Do you bring Lydia on the road with you?
No.
It's better to have someone on the road with you.
No, I don't. Mainly because, and she would go. When she can go, sometimes she does, But my feeling is like, oh, it's like I'm not, you know, you don't have to watch the same show. If I'm doing like five shows, you don't have to watch those shows. I don't really do anything during the day because I'm trying to focus on what I'm doing at night. I feel like I'm not fun. And so I just feel like you're going to come and it's not going to be fun for you. So I feel like I'm sparing her the experience. But she's always, if she can go, she's always like, I'll come. And I'm like, great, you're welcome to come. But I just feel like it's not going to be fun.
That's kind of cool, though. I mean, I there is something about watching the same set night after night that like only – it's a task only a comedian could love.
Right.
Like I'm sure I could do a week with you and watch your set every night because I watch it from a – We watch it almost from a mathematical perspective.
Yes, yes.
So as a comedian, you go, oh, okay. Okay, you did that.
It evolve.
Yeah, you did this one this way and then tweak it this way. And we were doing that for each other too. Like I would come off stage always with like 10 text messages from Natasha. Like you said this riff and that was good.
Well, Moshe riffs all the time and he's never had a notebook. He's never written any joke down. So like he's just relying. I think it's the sober brain. Like, he just has so much brain power that he's able to remember everything. I've never met anyone who doesn't.
She's reading off of a note that I just handed her, by the way.
Do you not record your sets?
I've never recorded a set.
He doesn't record a set. He's never written down a joke. And then
I never carried a notebook either.
Remember, you were on tour with Aziz, and Moshe's like, yeah, I mean, he sits and writes like... He writes his set list every night before he goes on stage. And I was like, everyone does that.
Well, the only reason I was surprised by it was he was doing an hour that was about to be recorded.
But you do it out of nervousness, too, and just out of
that,
like...
that is not something I do. But it was like, the hour was like about to be recorded. It was a set. It was no longer like in transition. And I was like...
I do a set list before I go on stage, though, no matter what. Do you, Chris?
Yeah, I do. Well, what I do is if I'm doing multiple... Do you guys want water? If I'm doing multiple shows... Like at a comedy club, I will write the set list for the first show and then just sort of keep it and tweak it, you know, but I don't write it for every show.
I've done a set list in my career when I am out of practice. If I've been on vacation for a month and then I come back.
I bet that's happened twice.
It's very infrequent. It's very infrequent that I write a set
I've seen
list.
You do that once.
Yeah. God, because I record every set and I never listen to them. And
but it's nice to know you have it.
Yes, I know, but I guess about 30% of my set is just riffing with the audience. And I know I probably have an entire specials worth of jokes that are just sitting forgotten from years of recorded sets. But it just feels too overwhelming to go back and listen to all of them.
You just haven't been offered enough money yet to do a special.
On the other hand, I feel like I have what you have, but it's gone. It's gone. It's in the ether. I'll never get that.
That would be fun, though,
back.
To listen to them all as a project.
Yeah, maybe.
At least to get new material.
You should hire someone.
No, I would never. I feel like I would feel terrible for even paying someone to listen.
I've actually paid
just go to
someone
Home Depot.
To listen to some of my old specials.
Just get someone to jump in the car and just throw them an iPod.
Okay, I'm a stand-up comedian. I just need you to go through this stuff. Tell me what the gold is. So like, all right, sir.
I have paid someone though to dictate. I can't listen to myself.
Yeah.
I don't want to rewatch a special.
Have you ever rewatched?
So I'd rather just scan it on a piece of paper.
Rewatch the special?
Yeah, your own special.
No, but sometimes like if I'm doing like radio stuff or TV stuff and they'll play a clip from something, I'll watch it and usually I think like, I should have spent more time on that.
Uh-huh.
Like I wasn't developed enough. Like I'm in a weird situation now where I have a bit that was tied to a larger bit. And I did the larger bit in my last special, and two shows I did to make that special, and I forgot to do the last part of the joke two times in a row. And so now I have this joke that I love that works, but I cannot – it's so tied to the other bit, and I am trying to figure out if there's any
you
way.
You will.
You know, the only thing I could think of –
Especially if it got a big laugh.
But the only way I could think about doing it is in the next special just say like, I did this bit on my last special.
Right.
And I forgot the last part, so I'm just going to do the whole thing. That's the only way I can think of doing it, and that feels like a fucking cheat. So I think I just am not going to get to do it.
You could say that and then say to the crowd, no, I'm not going to do it.
And then they'll go,
like,
come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Do it.
Please.
All right. So when you finish this – when did you shoot the honeymoon special?
We shot it in September?
No.
I have no concept of...
I don't know. Three months ago. About 3 months ago.
Okay.
November.
Yeah, November.
November in Austin.
That's right. Just before Thanksgiving.
That was like six months ago.
I was 8 months pregnant. 7 months pregnant.
Yeah.
But I was still looking pretty good.
You
I
were
was
looking
ready
great,
ready to
honey.
Do a special.
She looks very good and very pregnant and very beautiful in that special.
But as soon as – but we toured until like the day the doctor was like, you can't tour
no
anymore.
No more flying.
So like when we came back from the special, he was like, you can't leave anymore.
Yeah, that was so intense. Like going through that, and then she gets pregnant. We do the whole IVF thing. We get to the last egg. We pop it in there. We're like, whoa, it worked. Then she's pregnant. Then you're like, please stay pregnant. Then she's really pregnant. And then we go on tour and start writing this. like it was so insane how much work
but
it was.
But being pregnant is hard because it's like, imagine if you were pregnant. You do so much stuff, Chris. Like, and like, they're like, we really recommend you lay down a lot. And it's like, you kind of have
to. So for like 10 minutes a day? No. Just like 10 days.
And I kept over scheduling things. And it's just like, it's just my personality. So it is really hard. And like, you know, it can result in miscarriage. And like, you know, just self-care, like you have to kind of be like laying around. And it's like not, I didn't do it.
Finally,
but
you're when that special,
to.
Finally, when that special was over, it just felt like such a relief because there was so. It was more intense than any other stand-up related thing I've ever done. I don't know if it's true for you, just because the pregnancy was so interlaced with it. The next day, we spent an extra day in Austin at the Hotel St. Cecile, which is like Natasha's favorite hotel, and then we went and we ate Sundays. And we heard that there was a screening of Titanic at the AMC, like on the big screen.
Yep.
And we went to see Titanic. And it was like, it was just the night. I don't know. It was just the nicest decompression.
This is the most romantic thing I've ever heard you say, Mosh.
That I like Titanic?
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know you loved that day so much. Any, do you ever have a day where you don't do anything?
No. Yes. Yeah. No.
No.
I don't know. No, Lydia's always like, stop doing stuff. When we go on vacation, it takes me 72 hours to unplug, and it takes me 72 hours to replug in when we start back up from the momentum.
But you probably have an itinerary for vacation, too.
Well, maybe I do. Maybe I planned out our entire...
You need to go to, like... You know where you should go where we went on our honeymoon?
God damn it.
Oh, to Bora Bora.
There's nothing to do
that
there.
That would be good for you.
Just go stare at the glass floor. At
Exactly. It would be funny if they started a service for people like you where it's like, you know, when the kids are on drugs, they like abduct them and send them to rehab in Utah.
Right.
But it's like you, and they come in the night, they grab you, they throw you on a private plane, and they take you to Bora Bora, and they're like, relax, motherfucker!
You know, it's funny that you say that because I was just, the last time we were on vacation was over the New Year, and I'm like, oh, we'll go have this really relaxing time. And we went to the Pacific Northwest, and I did. I planned everything. Like, okay, we'll fly into Portland. We'll stay at this hotel for a few days. We'll rent the car. So I got us. We're gonna get on a ferry. We're gonna go to Victoria, and then we'll spend New Year's there. And then we're gonna hit this and this and this museum and this thing. And then we're gonna go across to Orcas Island for a couple days. Then we take these two.
Sounds
ferries.
Exhausting.
Yeah, I know.
Was it?
It's like producing the vacation.
Did I produce the vacation?
You know, in Bora Bora, there's not even waves.
What?
It's just like lagoon.
It's in a lagoon. So
it's just like there's nothing to distract you.
You're right. You just sit there and
that's eat
it.
Like, you know.
And it's not boring?
It's boring, but that's the beauty of it.
Okay. And also, you know, who doesn't love a $45 cheeseburger?
You're laughing like it's a joke, but it's not a joke.
I'm not. I can imagine.
It's a real thing. There was a club sandwich there that was $42, and it was $80 if you wanted to add lobster.
So you're the sort of your character on stage. Are you close to her at all? Like,
we are very close. Yes, I mean, dear friends.
In terms of like, if someone said to you like, okay, magically all of a sudden you're a billionaire, would you live that way or would you still like?
I like to surround myself with beauty if possible.
Okay.
So you know, I'm always trying to do that.
Even Burning Man, I saw your fucking souped up trailer for Burning Man, which was gorgeous.
Oh.
Do we have a souped up gorgeous trailer?
You had a fucking really cool like Airstreamy 1950s. Like,
yeah, no, that's cool. That's Moshe though. Moshe's got good style.
I'm obsessed with little teeny tiny things like that, like little teeny tiny RVs and stuff like that. And then Natasha gets in and she puts her touch on it. But I RVs are not her thing.
Did you ever think you would go to Burning Man?
No.
And but do you like it?
That's one of the reasons why I had a child, because I was like, he'll never make me go again.
Well, that's not true at all.
No, it is. I mean, maybe in 5, 6, 7. I mean, how young?
It'll be a while before I can make the ask.
You're not going to pitch that she goes to Burning Man, are you? Like in the next 5 years?
Let's make Burning Baby. Burning Man for hipster with kids.
I was thinking she could go this year, actually, but without us.
It'll expand her mind.
Yeah,
6 months old.
Yeah, we'll send her with a nanny.
Just eating trunk hot dogs.
Oh my god.
Trunk hot dogs.
But in general, you feel good? Are you happy?
Yeah. I got to get home and breastfeed.
Okay. You know I adore both. I adore the shit out of both of you. And I constantly wish we would hang out more. But then, oftentimes I always feel like, I'm just bothering people or they're busy or now you have a baby. But, you know.
We adore you too. So we consider that an invitation.
Please.
Yeah.
Please come hang out or let's have dinner when you can. I mean, I know obviously it's
we're I mean this
we'll come
we're
to you.
Help.
This isn't going to translate on the podcast, but we're wallpaper brothers, and that goes a long way.
We both have the same William. You know, what's really funny is I almost
this is going to be very relatable.
I had a little bit of an arrogant moment because a friend of mine said her friend is why I've been doing these Instagram stories about the remodel of the other place.
Oh, I got to follow you.
Oh yeah, I've been doing them for months. They're really fun. So they I said, oh, I got this William Morris wallpaper for the kitchen. And her friend sent it to her and was like, I think he meant William Sonoma. And he said William Morris. He had a Hollywood brain fart because William Morris is an agency. And so...
Oh, you're just like cracking your knuckles getting ready to...
I took a screenshot of like, you know, the definitive William Morris style book and his Wikipedia page and the wallpaper wrapper that says William fucking Morris was a leader of the arts and crafts movement. And then I had to stop, and I still sent it, but then I was like, who am I becoming that I had to like school someone that
about- no, that's a moment. No,
oh,
no,
she
no,
does
no,
stuff like that.
No, Chris, when you have moments like that, where the opportunity to body slam someone is made so crystal clear
over a 19th century wallpaper, right. Archival fucking wallpaper with fucking deer on it. Then you have to take
You got to take those moments, man. You don't get a lot of full wins. You know, usually wins come with some caveats. But if you get just a full, no matter how petty that full win is, you take that win.
That's very internet-y of me, and I apologize. But come back anytime, honestly, please. Come hang out. We can do podcasts. We don't have to do podcasts. You can just come over and we can hang out like people.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And watch our special on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
The Honeymoon right Special now. Is up now. Like, yeah, you can watch just go. It. You can just
streaming.
Go watch it.
Just watch that right
and
now.
Watch seasons 1 through 3 of Another Period.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.